The Early Years, 1827 to 1862, Volume 1, Chapter 27. 1860, the opening of the year of little joy. As he and Ellen returned home in late November, 1859, James White wrote in generalities for the review of the three-month trip east, reporting that both health and courage were at a high point. Perhaps he was thinking more of the advancement of the work in the states they had been visiting and what they were hearing of the work in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Ohio than what they faced in Battle Creek. During the last two or three weeks of the long journey, Ellen had frequently been quite ill. By the turn of the year, she was pregnant. James faced financial problems as the business agent of the publishing house, a concern that had no more in the way of organization than a publishing committee. Steps had been taken in 1855 to transfer the business from the shoulders of James to the church, but the church was without name or organization and, from a business standpoint, was elusive. This left White to carry full business, financial, and administrative responsibility personally. The new year was but one day old when, before dawn, James and Ellen White underwent a heart-rending experience. She wrote of it. "Early this morning we were called up to go to Brother Loughborough's. They think their child, Teresa, is dying. Dress hastily and go to the afflicted family. The little one was dying. Oh, how sad the sight, a mother witnessing the last agonies of her loved one, her only child. We prayed for sustaining grace for the father and mother, that they might be perfectly reconciled to the will of God, that the little one's name was enrolled in the Lamb's Book of Life, to be called forth immortal at the resurrection of the just. We witnessed the dying struggle. The little eyes are closed, no more to look on earthly things. The little prattling tongue has ceased. Her troubles are ended. Quietly will she rest until the life-giver calls her from her dusty bed. This is a dark, dreary world. The whole human family are subject to disease, sorrow, and death." Manuscript 1, 1860. John and Mary Loughborough were particularly close to James and Ellen White. For nearly 2 years they had been residing in Battle Creek, and usually the two ministers went out together to hold meetings in the churches. Frequently Mary was in the White home for a visit with Ellen. In January, 1859, Ellen had spent most of the month traveling by carriage and sleigh with John and Mary and little Teresa as they journeyed in Michigan as far north as the new church in Wright, Michigan. Teresa was then 10 months old. The lure of the West with the thrilling reports of how the message was being received in Iowa, it was difficult for James White to think of nothing less than hastening west to see for himself and to take part in the evangelistic thrust. Leaving the publishing interests in the hands of the able staff in Battle Creek, he and Ellen were off for meetings in Lisbon, Iowa, February 25th and 26th, expecting to spend the next 10 or 12 weeks in Iowa and Wisconsin. But just before leaving Battle Creek, James lit a fuse that smoldered for a time and then set off an explosion. With the growth of the church, there was an accelerating realization, particularly on the part of White, of the dire necessity of organization of some type. He had strong support from the light given to Ellen during the previous 6 years, calling attention to the vital need of gospel order. Church property had to be held in a manner that would be legally secure. Money to advance the publishing work had to be borrowed. While the lenders were quite willing to accept notes signed by James White, considering it loans for which he was personally responsible, he could not be satisfied with that. On the review editorial page of February 23, the same issue that carried the notice of their appointments in Iowa, he introduced two items. The first entitled Bills, and the second, Borrowed Money. The first had to do with money owed for subscriptions to the review, which amounted to $1,881. This the publishing house could carry, as explained by James White, only as several warm friends of the cause have lent money to this office, without interest, to the amount of $1,500. Ibid, February 23, 1860. He called for relief by prompt payment from the subscribers. He followed this by the item on borrowed money, opening with the declaration. "To those who have so kindly and generously lent money to this office, we wish to say that as an individual, we do not wish to be considered in any way responsible for it. We act simply as publishing agent by the direction of the publishing committee. There are no reasons why we should be responsible for borrowed money used for the benefit of this office, which is the property of the church at large. This property is not insured, and therefore, in case of fire, would be a total loss. Those who consider it proper to let their money remain in the office under these circumstances will do so at their own risk." Ibid. Then White laid before the church the pressing need for an organization that would safeguard investments and loans. "We hope, however, that the time is not far distant when this people will be in that position necessary to be able to get church property insured, hold their meeting houses in a proper manner, that those persons making their wills, and wishing to do so, can appropriate a portion to the publishing department. Till this can be brought about, we must do the best we can, but we wish it distinctly understood that we bear no individual responsibility in the matter. Ibid. He cited a recent experience as an illustration, making his point crystal clear. A sister in Vermont proposed to let the office have the use of $100, without interest, as several others had done. The money was sent, and also a note filled out for us to sign. We refused to write James White, but in its place wrote Advent Review and Sabbath Herald office, and sent it back to Vermont. In a few weeks the note was returned and the money called back. This was all done in good feeling. White turned to the church, appealing for helpful suggestions. We call on preachers and leading brethren to give this matter their attention. If any object to our suggestions, will they please write out a plan on which we as a people can act. Ibid. The swelling discussion carried through the columns of the Review, sparked by this statement, continued for 7 months. Some cried that to organize, to choose a name, or to turn to the world in any way for financial security was to plunge into Babylon. In each response, James White urged his protesting brethren, please write out a plan on which we as a people can act. The tour in the West as evangelists labored in Iowa, Ohio, and Wisconsin. They held their meetings in courthouses, often in churches when not close to them, and in private homes. While on this tour, White observed, the great work seems to be West. There, broken fragments of society have crowded in, and not being fully organized and settled, are in a more favorable condition to hear the truth than in older portions of the country. And many have not realized their high expectations of the West, and in their disappointed state of mind are better prepared to hear of the better country. We believe that the message will yet be spread far and wide, but at present we think that great efforts should be made in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Ibid. April 19, 1860. His first report of the tour was enlightening in its detail. We are now at Lisbon, Iowa, at the home of Brother and Sister Wilson. This is Brother and Sister Cornell's headquarters, a good resting place for pilgrims. We left Battle Creek at 3 p.m., changed cars at midnight at Chicago, reached the Mississippi River at 7 a.m., crossed the ice on foot, walking behind the baggage drawn on a sleigh by four men, the ice being too weak to bear up horses, and felt relief when we stepped upon Iowa soil. Ibid. March 6, 1860. The first night they were cordially received by a family of believers living near Lisbon. Here Ellen was taken severely ill, vomiting and raising blood. But in 24 hours she seemed quite recovered, and they were able to go on into Lisbon. After weekend meetings in which Ellen White was able to participate, they made their way to Anamosa, 16 miles distant, where Cornell was holding meetings. Sabbath and Sunday, March 3 and 4, James White spoke in the courthouse 5 times. In Iowa they found the mud deep and travel difficult, but the interest to hear the message was great. Iowa seems, wrote James White in his first report, to be a very encouraging field of labor. Ibid. Ellen White stood at the side of her husband, often speaking for a few minutes following his addresses. Letters to the children as year followed year, James and Ellen White, working as a team, found their parental responsibilities increasing. Instead of infants, Willie was now almost 6 and the two older boys were entering their teens. While on such trips as this in the West, the mother took pains to keep in touch with the boys by frequent letters. Some of these have been preserved. From Anamosa, Iowa, on Sabbath, March 3, she wrote to Willie, I have just finished a letter to your brothers, and will write a few lines to you. I should so love to take you, my sweet Willie, in my arms, but no, this cannot be. But I hope we shall be returned home safely and we can see you all again in our own happy home. Willie, you must be a good boy. You must overcome an impatient spirit. To be impatient is not to be willing to wait, to want everything you desire in a moment. You must say to yourself, I'll wait. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Willie, if you would be happy, you must rule well your own spirit. Be obedient to Jenny, love your brothers, and be good all day. When you go to your grandfather's, you must not act rough and boisterous, but gentle and mild. When the boys go to the office, you must try not to be lonesome. Make yourself contented and happy. Don't fret, but learn to be patient, my dear boy. We love you very much and will now say goodbye for the present. Your mother, Letter 2, 1860. In a letter addressed to Henry and Edson written from Iowa City on March 14, she discussed at some length the forming of good characters. Near the close she admonished, do not give way to fretful, unkind feelings, but remember that the Lord reads even the thoughts of the hearts, and nothing is concealed from His all-seeing eye. Right acts, right thoughts will be remembered in heaven, and every victory you gain when tempted to do wrong, every temptation manfully resisted, will be recorded in heaven. Don't forget, dear children, that evil deeds and wrongs are faithfully recorded, and will bring their punishment unless repented of and confessed, and washed away by the atoning blood of Jesus. It is easier to go in an evil way than to do right, for Satan and his angels are constantly tempting to do wrong. But there is one who has promised to hear the needy when they cry. Go to God when tempted to speak or act wrong. Ask him in faith for strength, and he will give it. He will say to his angels, "There is a poor little boy trying to resist the power of Satan and has come to me for help. I will aid him." Go stand by, Letter 1, 1860. At Knoxville, Iowa, their appointments for meetings at Dayton and Knoxville had to be postponed because the Cedar River was filled with broken ice. They arrived at Knoxville for the last weekend in March. There they found Moses Hall. Of their reception, James White wrote, "Just before we reached Knoxville, the cry of Mormons was raised against us, and a strange enthusiasm seemed to see some of the people in the place, as if inspired by Satan. Some talked of tar and feathers, and some of our friends even feared that we might be ill-treated. It was said that Mrs. White should not speak in Knoxville. But all that we witnessed of any account was the sort of hellish grin on the countenances of some, which disappeared after we had each talked a few times in the old courthouse. Before we left, we were treated with respect both in the place of meeting and when meeting the citizens on the streets. We can excuse the people who are deceived and imposed upon, but not those ministers who raised the cry Mormons to keep the people from hearing us." The Review and Herald, April 12, 1860. White reported a church there of about 100. For their meetings, another 50 attended from other places, nearly all of these having come into the message during the previous 8 months. With the encouraging outlook in western Iowa, James White urged that 2 tents be purchased for evangelistic work during the coming summer. He secured pledges for about half of the $1,000 that would be needed, and, so that there would be no delay, he advanced money to secure the tents. He closed his report, stating, "We spoke 7 times in 4 days, with some freedom." Mrs. White spoke an exhortation as many times with freedom. Brethren Snook and Brinkerhoff were set apart to the work of the gospel ministry by the laying on of hands. It was a season of deep interest. Ibid, we will hear again of Snook and Brinkerhoff, in connection with an apostasy in Iowa. Not mentioned in this report was a significant vision given to Ellen White at Knoxville, one that brought great sadness to her heart. There was opened before her the spiritual condition, weaknesses, and deficiencies of friends and associates in Battle Creek, particularly of some key individuals in the review office. 6 personal testimonies of various lengths, based on this vision, are on file, one running to 11 pages and another 19 pages. The first was written on April 15th. Note some of the opening lines. "Dear sister, I have been shown something I dare not withhold. In the last vision given at Knoxville, some things were shown me concerning individual cases. I was shown your case. I saw," Letter 5, 1860. "Dear brother and sister, while at Knoxville, some things were shown me in regard to the cause of God and especially in regard to the messengers and their wives. I was shown," Letter 6, 1860. "Dear brother, while at Knoxville, Iowa, some things were shown me in regard to the state of things in the office and at Battle Creek. I saw that there were grievous things in the office," Letter 8, 1860. As these letters and 3 others of similar character were written, Ellen White was putting the finishing touches on Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, her autobiographical account. She also prepared a general statement for publication covering many of the points in the 6 personal testimonies. She inserted them at the close of the first printing under the title Testimony for the Church. It opened, "I have been shown that Satan has not been stupid and careless these many years since his fall, but has been learning. He has grown more artful. His plans are laid deeper and are more covered with a religious garment to hide their deformity. The power of Satan now to tempt and deceive is tenfold greater than it was in the days of the apostles. His power has increased, and it will increase, until it is taken away. His wrath and hate grow stronger as his time to work draws near its close." Spiritual Gifts, 2:277. She wrote of the work of the angels in protecting the children of the Lord and described the conflict between the good and evil angels. "I saw that the angels of God are not to force or bend the will of the individual they watch over. They are to gently chide, warn, and guard. Satan can never force back these holy angels from their charge. None can do this but the individuals that they are watching over. But if individuals continue to retain their own will, choose their own course, and have their own way, the angels leave them in sadness. Then Satan comes in to control the will, and bend the mind, and smiles in hellish triumph at his success." Ibid, 2:277, 278. In this vein, she discussed the indifference of those who were relaxed and enjoying their ease and supposed security, and the difficult place her husband was placed in by God's call to him to take responsibilities and to risk something on the success of this message. Ibid, 2:280, 281. She added, "God would be pleased if others would feel the same interest and move with the same energy, but many will not venture. I saw that God was displeased with those who do not take the burden themselves, and then stand ready to murmur at the one upon whom he lays the heavy burden. I saw that the blessing of the Lord has rested upon every essential move that has been made to advance His cause, and steadily has the work progressed. One difficulty after another has been surmounted. It is because God's hand was in the work. I saw that some do not realize that selfishness is at the bottom of their murmuring. God's humble instrument moves too fast for their faith, and His venturing out as He has done has reproved their slow and unbelieving pace. And there has been satisfaction taken in watching and finding fault. Hints have been thrown out, doubts expressed, which have had their influence. Their faith was not strong enough to keep pace with Him. I was shown that the work was not left in the hands of anyone upon earth. Angels of God have charge of the work, and they counsel and direct God's people through chosen agents, and thus the work moves forward. Ibid 2:281-282. She mentioned the way some people related to the messages. I saw that individuals would rise up against the plain testimonies. It does not suit their natural feelings. They would choose to have smooth things spoken unto them, and have peace cried in their ears. I view the church in a more dangerous condition than they ever have been. Ibid 2:284. She referred to the visions and her experience in presenting the messages to the people and how they were received. It has been a matter of great perplexity to me to know what course to pursue with messages given me for individuals. I have often written messages of reproof for different ones, and given them to these persons, and they have laid them away, and have said nothing about them. Their course is shown in many instances that they were not affected by the messages, and they have continued to have a bad influence in the church, who were ignorant of the reproof given. My course is now clear to wrong the church no longer. If reproofs are given, I dare not commit them alone to the individuals to be buried up by them, but shall read what the Lord has seen fit to give me, to those of experience in the church, and if the case demands, bring it before the whole church. I shall keep these things secret no longer. God's people must know what the Lord has been pleased to reveal, that they be not deceived and led astray by a wrong spirit. Ibid 2:293-294. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, comes from the press. Sometime in the summer, the first printing of Ellen White's work, Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, came from the press. It carried the extended title My Christian Experience, Views, and Labors in Connection with the Rise and Progress of the Third Angel's Message. 295 pages were devoted to her life story up to the date of publication. Only 400 copies were printed and sent out at this time, with a closing note requesting that if any find incorrect statements in this book, they should inform the author. The finished book was promised about October. Ibid 2:295. The review of September 18th announced that this volume of 304 pages was ready. Later printings carried more material. A fourth son is born on Thursday, September 20th. Ellen White gave birth to a fourth son. It must be they expected a girl, for the child went without a name for nearly 3 months. Ellen White's reference to the experience is brief. September 20th, 1860, my fourth child, John Herbert White, was born. When he was 3 weeks old, my husband felt it to be his duty to travel west. Ibid 2:294. See also Testimonies for the Church, 1:244. She cherished the thought that with a new babe demanding her care, she would be at home more. What satisfaction this gave her!